Let's open our Bibles today to the book of Ezra, and I want us to start at the very tail end of Ezra chapter number 2. Now, this is all happening in the first year of Cyrus the Great, the king of the Medo-Persian Empire. Now, he's been king for quite some time. This is the first year that he's been king over the Judeans that have been in the Babylonian Empire. So it is the year 537 BC. And he's given a decree that any Jew, anyone of ethnic Israeli heritage, can go to the land of Jerusalem and assist in rebuilding that city and rebuilding the temple, reestablishing the Jewish presence in the land, and reestablishing the Jewish faith in the land, worshiping God there. And the reason he's been prompted to do this is because God has moved his heart. And we know that God already knew his name back in the time of Isaiah, a couple of hundred years previous. So this is all very prophetic here. Then we had a little less than 50,000 volunteers that decide they're going to be the first wave of the returnees from exile. Ezra chapter 2, verse 68 says, "Some of the heads of the families, when they came to the house of he who is that is in Jerusalem," now the house that we're talking about is the site of the ruins of the house. There's nothing there other than scattered burnt debris. And maybe the foundational stones in places are still in place. That's it. It was pretty much erased by the Babylonians at God's direction. So when they came to the Jerusalem site of the temple ruins, they made freewill offerings for the house of God to erect it on its site. So they gave the basic supplies needed to get this job started. According to their ability, they gave to the treasury of the work 61,000 derricks of gold. Now, that's a weight calculation because this is before coins came into existence. But the value that is given to this in later days for coinage types that this is representing is something like a couple hundred million dollars worth of buying power, because it's well over a million days' wages. So a lot of value here. Now, some of it is going to be physically used in the building of the temple, but other parts of it will be used to buy other things. 5,000 minas of silver, same thing. Some of it will be used in the physical building. Others will be used for its value. The total value here is somewhere in the neighborhood of half a million days' wages. So many tens of millions of dollars of buying power in our modern-day economy. So we've got a lot of money that's being brought back at this time to be used for rebuilding the temple. And 100 priests' garments. These garments apparently were taken away into exile with them and are now being returned to their proper service once the temple building is built. Now the priests, the Levites, some of the people, the singers, the gatekeepers, the temple servants, lived in their towns and all the rest of Israel in their towns. So they're living not at the ruins of Jerusalem, but rather in the communities where their ancestors were sent into exile from. And then they are commuting over the temple if they're going to be actually involved in the physical hands-on reconstruction process. Chapter number 3 gives us a monthly date. We already have the year. It's 537 BC. What about telling us the time of year? It says, when the seventh month came. The seventh month of the year for the Jewish people is at the beginning of fall. It's the transition from summer to fall. So in this particular year, the first day of the seventh month would have fallen in the first part of October. And the children of Israel were in the towns, and the people gathered as one man to Jerusalem. Now, why are they gathering to Jerusalem as one big, large group? Because the seventh month was the month of the Feast of Tabernacles. It kicked off with the Feast of Trumpets on the first day of the seventh month, which was the call to gather. On the 10th day of the month was supposed to be the Yom Kippur observations, which was intended to be a reminder each year that the sacrificial system had to be utilized in order to gain or to maintain a relationship with God. And so it was one of the best ways I think you'd describe it is it was like a rededication or a reestablishment of commitment to sacrifice all the time in the temple. And so the way they did it was they fasted on that day, contemplating what it would be like if they didn't have a means of seeking out God's forgiveness through sacrifice. So Yom Kippur, very big, important day in the calendar. And I'm sure that they continued mourning on that day whenever they were in exile. But now that they're back in the land, they're mourning and contemplating on that day for a totally different reason. And that is, we have sinned, we brought this desolation upon us, and now we need the temple back in place with its sacrificial system in order to deal with our sins. And then would come the Feast of Tabernacles, which was the time when all of the harvests have been brought back, have been brought in, all of the grain from earlier in the year, all of the olives, the grapes, the pomegranates, the vegetables, even the wool from the sheep, all of that has been gathered in, and a tithe of it is to be given at Jerusalem for the use of the priests. And so this is a very big annual activity in the seventh month. So that's why they're gathering. Verse number two, then arose Yeshua, the son of Jozadak. Now this is Joshua, the high priest, who is the leader of all things religious for this group of returnees. We'll actually see him mentioned in other books from this time period. With his fellow priests, and Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, with his kinsmen. Zerubbabel is the government leader. He is probably tied in with the, well, he definitely is tied in with the family of David. His ancestor is Solomon. And he is representing the government side of the equation, getting things back into place. You'll actually see his name in the genealogy list of Joseph, the adopted father of Jesus, that's recorded in the book of Matthew. So Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, with his kinsmen, and they built the altar of the God of Israel to offer burnt offerings on it, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. And they set the altar in its place, for fear was on them because of the peoples of the lands, and they offered burnt offerings on it to he who is, burnt offerings morning and evening. So we see here the reestablishment of the sacrificial system by the building of an altar. Now, this altar is not like the altar that was described in the book of Ezekiel. It should have been, because you remember, we talked about it when we were going through chapters 40 and onward in the book of Ezekiel, that this was what they were supposed to do when they came back to the promised land. But they didn't get it done. While they are committed to rebuilding the temple and reestablishing the Jewish presence and worship in the land, you'll note it says here that they were afraid of the other peoples of the land, the non-Jews that are living in the areas to the north and south and east and west of them. They are so afraid that they don't follow through with the instructions in the book of Ezekiel, which is, in my opinion, one of the reasons that they didn't see some of the miraculous things in those chapters from Ezekiel happen during their time, such as the glorious rehabitation of the temple complex by God's Shekinah glory. We will not see that happen in the story of this rebuilding of the temple. All right, so what do they do? They reestablish the daily sacrifices. One mid-morning, when the sun's halfway up between sunrise and noon, and another one when the sun is halfway down from noon to sunset. So the morning and the evening sacrifices. And they were also supposed to have a prayer service where incense is offered. Now, they don't have a building yet. All they have is an altar. And more than likely, they are doing it according to the instructions given in the book of the law, that they were to gather together uncut natural stones and pile them up. And then if it was big enough that it needed a ramp in order to approach it, they were to use a ramp. So they'll get around to building a much more official sacrificial altar later. But right now, it's just the basic thing to get them started back into their worship ceremonies of sacrifice. And so these sacrifices will continue unabated until the time of the Maccabees, whenever the prophecies in the book of Daniel take place and the abomination of desolation is set up and the sacrifices are stopped again for a 3.5-year period. All right, so verse 4, they kept the Feast of Booths as it is written. So the Feast of Booths, that's the Feast of Tabernacles. It's a mandatory festival held from the 15th to the 23rd of every seventh month of the Jewish people. It was to remind them that they were in the Promised Land and no longer in the wilderness. And so they also enjoyed it as kind of a camping out time and a time of celebration and community fellowship. So what else did they do? And they offered the daily burnt offerings by number according to the rule as each day required. And after that, the regular burnt offerings, the offerings of the new moon and at all the appointed face of He Who Is, and the offerings of everyone who made a free will offering to He Who Is. So they reestablished the sacrificial system with all the required special sacrifices. There would be sacrifices offered on the first day of the month. That's the new moon. There were sacrifices that were special to be offered on the Sabbath days. There were special sacrifices to be offered on Passover and Pentecost, and here the Feast of Tabernacle days. And they were also to offer every day the morning and the evening sacrifice. And then anyone that wished to come and offer a sacrifice for sin or a sacrifice just because you wanted to give a special offering, what's called here a freewill offering to the Lord, that was also something that they could now do again, that they hadn't been able to do by the time we're doing this, it's been 51 years since the temple was destroyed. So 51 years of the 70 years of the exile, they never had an opportunity to offer sacrifices at Jerusalem. That's all started again. To the text, verse 6. From the first day of the seventh month, which that would be the 5th of October in this particular year, they gave money to the mason. Excuse me, I skipped a line. They began to offer burnt offerings to He Who Is, but the foundation of the temple of He Who Is was not yet laid. So this is where we're starting to find out they're dragging their feet, I have to acknowledge. They're not getting at it like they were expected to do in the book of Ezekiel. So they gave money to the masons and the carpenters, the food, drink, and oil to the Sidonians and the Tyrians to bring cedar trees from Lebanon to the sea to Joppa, according to the grant that they had from Cyrus, king of Persia. Now, some people say the reason they're not laying the foundation yet is because they got to get the materials in place first, and that's what they're doing here in verse number 7. And there is some truth to that, but they've been in the land for a little while yet, and they're just now getting around to building the sacrificial altar. So they are definitely delaying their rebuilding in favor of reestablishing their own homes. Now, why am I saying it that way? Because later we're going to have some prophets sent, and one of the complaints that will be made from God is, you have built your homes, and yet you have not built my home. So these guys have come and ended up being more focused on reestablishing themselves in the land. But they are also making the preparations for the temple. Now, we notice here that they're going to try to follow some of the pattern of the first temple, where they're going to get the tree materials from the mountains of Lebanon. The cedars and cypresses of Lebanon are going to be chopped and trimmed and taken down by the professional Sidonians and Tyrians to the sea, and then made into rafts, floated down the Mediterranean coastline, broken up at Joppa, which is pretty much Tel Aviv nowadays, and then brought about 60 miles up to Jerusalem to then be turned into part of the building materials for the temple. And so they're in the process of getting that started again. But it is Cyrus, king of Persia, that has given them specific permission to do all of these things. He's already given them paperwork that they are to build a specific sized building, which is I'm going to keep referring it to this way. It is a budget building. It is not the full flung design of Ezekiel. Verse number 8. Now, in the second year after their coming to the house of God at Jerusalem, so we've now shifted to 536 BC. In the second month, that's the Jewish month. So we're going to be sometime in later April, depending on exactly what part of the month it was. It's going to be April or May. Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, so he's the guy that's in charge of the government side of the equation, and Yeshua, or Joshua, the son of Jozadak, who is the high priest, so he's taking care of the religious side of the equation, made a beginning, together with the rest of their kinsmen, the priests, the Levites, and all who had come to Jerusalem from the captivity, from the exile. They appointed the Levites from 20 years old and upward to supervise the work of the house of He Who Is. So they've got the Levites from 20 years of age and upward going to be doing the actual hands-on construction work at the temple site, because they are specially consecrated to move around in the area where the old shrine building used to exist. We can, I think, project backward into time the attitude of modern-day religious Jews toward the Temple Mount. Modern-day religious Jews studiously avoid going up onto the Temple Mount because they don't want to accidentally be inside the confines of the old shrine building if they are not authorized by their heritage to be in that area. And so I think that same attitude may have existed back at this time. where only the Levites are allowed to take the building materials to the rebuilding of the shrine building area and get it rebuilt. So they've got all those guys appointed. Verse 9, Yeshua with his sons and his brothers and Kadmiel and his sons, the sons of Judah, together supervise the workmen in the house of God, along with the sons of Henadad and the Levites, their sons and brothers. So we've got Judeans on the government side of the equation who are involved in keeping an eye on the blueprints and the material provision and handing all that off to the people on the religious side of the equation, the Levites and the priests, who are actually taking it and putting it all together. Verse 10, when the builders laid the foundation of the temple of He Who Is, the priests in their vestments came forward with trumpets, and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals to praise He Who Is, according to the directions of David, king of Israel. So what's happening here? They've probably come into the site of the ruins of the temple complex, and more than likely with the assistance of the oldest among them, particularly the oldest priests that have come back, they are able to identify the outlines of where the old shrine building was located. They've removed any of the burnt out debris, the charred wood that would have been still laying around. And now they've probably taken away any defective footstones, you know, the stones that are actually buried into the ground, the footings, if you will, of the temple shrine building. Those have probably been moved out of the way, and new footstones have been put in their place. And now we have the outline. We've got the footprint of the shrine building that is obvious in front of them. And so this is a time of dedication and celebration for what is yet to come. So the priests that are singers and trumpets, or excuse me, the Levites who are singers and the priests who are trumpeters, they are out there making music, and then they sing one of the favorite choruses from Israeli history. They sang responsively, praising and giving thanks to He Who Is, for He is good, and His chesed, His steadfast love, endures forever toward Israel. So they are celebrating the fact that they are here, and God is loving them and giving them the chance to start fresh and rebuild the temple. Now, what did the crowd do on this day of laying the foundation? All the people shouted with a great shout when they praised He Who Is, because the foundation of the house of He Who Is was laid. So they've got the footprint laid out, and they know that the building is now going to rise up above that footprint. And they're all excited about it because it's a new beginning. Verse 12, but many of the priests and the Levites and heads of fathers' houses, old men who had seen the first house, wept with a loud voice when they saw the foundation of this house being laid, though many shouted aloud for joy, so that the people could not distinguish the sound of the joyful shout from the sound of the people's weeping. For the people shouted with a great shout, and the sound was heard far away. So what's happening here, what's being described in this passage, is that some of the oldest people that were young whenever this temple, the original temple, Solomon's temple, was still intact, right before the Babylonians came in and destroyed it and carried them away into exile, they remembered what that complex looked like. And as they're seeing the footprint of a very basic structure being put back in place, it makes them sad, thinking about what they've lost. and realizing it's not going to be back to the standard of glory that it was when I was a kid. It was back in the time of Solomon's Temple. You got to remember that Solomon's Temple, even at its last stage of existence, was probably the most expensive per cubic foot building ever built in the entire history of the world, even to this moment. Just the building materials were valued at several trillions of dollars. And it would have been one of the seven wonders of the ancient world if that list had been made back in the time that it existed. And so that building is long gone, and this new one isn't going to hold a candle to it. But the people that never saw the old building, they're caught up in the excitement of the moment. But the older ones, crying. So it's a bittersweet day that's going on here. I hope you have an absolutely fabulous weekend and a great Lord's Day. Come back next week, and we will get back into God's holy, inspired word.